Every Sunday morning, as we gather, an acolyte starts in the back, and we light the candle lighter, and they walk up, and they come up the steps, and they light the left candle and then the right candle, right? We do that every single week. Now, why do we do that? The word acolyte comes from a Greek word that means attendant. And the tradition of an acolyte bringing in the light for worship grew out of the stories of two attendants in the Old Testament. Samuel assisted the priest Eli, and Elisha assisted the prophet Elijah. And so because of their assisting, they became known as assistants, and that's the Greek word from which we get the word acolyte. So when you're acolyting, you're sort of acting like Samuel and Elisha. Well, acolytes have been doing this ritual of bringing the light into worship since about 250 AD. So for quite some time, we've had this ritual of a candle lighter being lit, coming in, and lighting the candles for worship. And then at the close of worship, what do? They get up, and they get the candle lighter, and they come back up, and they relight the candle lighter, and they put out the candles, and they walk to the back of the sanctuary, and they snuff it out, and they hang up the lighter until next week, and that's it. Fire out till next week. Right? Or not? I don't know. I don't know, Sam. I don't know. Mike Laberton is a Presbyterian pastor and a professor, and he wrote a book called The Dangerous Act of Worship, and it's been sitting on my desk for almost a year, I have to tell you, and I haven't read it because I thought, The Dangerous Act of Worship? What's dangerous about worship? About the most dangerous thing I could think of in worship is when the acolyte comes down the aisle and we're not all seated in the pews and we have fire going and we have people with their backs to them who might back into it and catch on fire. That's about the most dangerous thing we ever do in worship, right? So I didn't pick it up until I got ready to work on this sermon, and I thought, well, maybe it says something about fire. Well, in his book, Reverend Laberton tells about a man who came into his office one day, and he said, I am looking for some help because every night I have a conversation with my wife who has just become a Christian. And I need to know what this is about. Now, when he came into Reverend Laberton's office, he made it very clear that he was a very busy man, that he was very successful, and he didn't have much time for this, but he was tired of these nightly conversations, and he just wanted, like, some bullet points of things that he needed to know so that he could answer her and put her to rest, right? Now, please, quickly, tell me what I need to know for these conversations. And Pastor Laberton says it would have been easy for me to just hand him some books or some pamphlets. And while those could be good, instead, I said, I can see that you are a very busy and successful person. So I don't think what you're asking for is a good idea. Well, that just really shocked the guy. And he was a little taken aback, and he said, well, why? And he said, because if I were to give you some bullet points, and you were to really understand them, they would have such a significant way of working into your life that it would just really mess things up. You would have to rethink the meaning of success and time and family, of everything, really. I don't think you want to do that, do you? What happens when we take the light out down the aisle from worship? Does it get snuffed out or does it keep burning? It depends on what our answer would be. Do we want worship to have such a significant way of working into our lives that it could really mess things up? Do we want to have to rethink the meaning of success, of time, of family, of everything, really? The passage that we read this morning from Micah is God's response to the request for a bullet-pointed list. Here's the request. What do I need to do? How should I come to worship? Should I bow down? How should I approach God, really? Should I come with some burned offerings or some year-old calves? Will God be pleased if I bring 1,000 rams? Or maybe some oil. I've got oil. How about some oil? Should I give my oldest child for my crimes? The fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? I really just want a bullet-pointed list. I'm really willing to give anything. That's it. What do we need to do to get on God's good side? What is required? Now, we have to put ourselves where Micah was. It was a time that I'm sure we can't relate to. Times were scary. Things were out of control. And all the talk at the city gate was about the threat of Assyria. The northern kingdom, Israel, had been captured in 721. And now it's 20 years later, and the Assyrians have turned their assault on Judah. They're coming down south. And people are getting frightened. It's coming. So the question with what shall I come before the Lord is a question of we're busy and we're successful. We don't have a lot of time for this, but we just need some bullet points to get this God on our side. What can we do to appease God? We just need to take care of that and move on. But the answer God gives is, you already know. You already know. God has shown you what is good. What does the Lord require of you? To do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. It's not about something that you can bring in, drop off, and go back to your regular life. It's about a new life. It's about a new way of going out after that fire. The Lord requires that when you worship, the light that leads you out not be snuffed out at the door, but be transferred. The acolyte carries the candle lighter, but you carry the light. It's just like Jesus is talking about the gardener grafting a branch that's capable of bearing beautiful, abundant fruit, but not capable of holding itself up. In worship, we are grafted, Jesus says, into the true vine. We're connected with Christ. And if you've ever done any grafting of plants and choosing of plants, which I haven't, green thumb, I have not, but what they tell me is that you choose a plant that has really good roots and a really good, strong, central trunk. And then you graft in branches that bear the preferred fruit. You know who the true vine is? Jesus. And you know where his roots are? In the good soil of God. We are the branches that get grafted in to bear good fruit. Well, Reverend Laborton, in writing about dangerous worship, says, justice and mercy are not add-ons to worship, nor are they consequences of worship. Justice and mercy are intrinsic to God and therefore intrinsic to the worship of God. We should not fool ourselves, he says, into thinking that it's enough to feel drawn to the heart of God without our lives showing the heart of God. We should not fool ourselves into thinking that it is enough to feel drawn to the heart of God without our lives showing the heart of God. Jesus' roots are firmly set in God, and we have been chosen for our fruits. The success or the failure of the graft is seen in how we leave worship. Successful grafting in plants only requires that a vascular connection take place between the grafted tissues. Now, that is a very scientific explanation, isn't it? Basically, what happens is plants need those little tubes that carry the nutrients and the water to connect between the branch and the vine so that the branch gets fed, right? Jesus says, as the Father has fed me with love, so I have fed you with love. Stay there. Abide in my love. Successful grafting requires that the vascular connection of Jesus' love nourish and grow the fruit on us. So how do we carry the light out of worship? It starts by wanting to abide in the true vine. It starts by wanting to walk humbly with God. Just like that man in Pastor Lieberton's office, we have to be open to the gospel messing things up and making us rethink what success really is, what family really is, what time really means, really everything. It starts by asking God to enlarge our hearts, to graft us into the true vine, and to give us eyes of mercy to see people who are in need, both in our immediate community and gradually to see people beyond that too. And then to give us a vision for justice. Now, it is easy to come into worship or even to get on the internet and look up injustice or hear about injustice and say, wow, there's a lot going on in our world that's not good, right? It's pretty easy to see that there's a lot in our world that is not going the way it should be going. And it's easy to shake our heads and say, whoa, that's complex. Now, that's complicated. I have not the foggiest notion how that is ever going to work out. That ever happened to you? It happens to me. 25 million people today are living in slavery. 25 million. I can't even comprehend what that looks like. 40% of the world's population live without basic sanitation. 4 out of every 10 people around the world live without basic sanitation. Over 1 billion people today will use unsafe water. 1 billion people. Or maybe here at home. Last night, 30 people came seeking a room in the inn, and there were 27 beds. We could see the needs. And we can know that we cannot meet them all and say, it's too much. It's complicated. It's too complex. Right? We could snuff the light out when we leave here. But it's not true. Love is not complicated or complex. When asked about the enormity of the problems of this world and seeming futility of what any of us can do, you know what Mother Teresa said? She said, we ourselves feel that what we are doing is just a drop in the ocean. But the ocean would be less because of the missing drop. We might think that what we can do is just a drop in an ocean. But the ocean would be less without our drop. The darkness of our world will not be banished as long as we only light this room. Will you pray for God to enlarge your heart, to give you eyes to see and a vision for justice? Will you abide in the love of Jesus? May we go forth from this place to love and to serve. And may God's light go with us. Amen.